You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
We're all probably familiar with the term the gender gap. It's used to describe the major difference in the economic and political opportunities of women as compared to men. A new report by the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives is titled The Gap in the Gender Gap. It examines the violence that women face on a day-to-day basis in Canada. Kate McInturf is author of the report. She's a research associate with the CCPA in Ottawa, and she joins me by phone this morning from Ontario. Hello, Kate.
Hi, Jane.
Now, tell me about the title that you chose for your report. What do you mean by the gap in the gender gap?
Well, the gender gap is one of the many ways in which we measure, as you say, the gap between men's and women's access to various kinds of public goods like health and education. But all of the kind of major measures that exist that we use to kind of track how we're doing on equality between men and women are missing any kind of measurement that looks at violence against women. And it really struck me, particularly in the debates around the Sheryl Sandberg book, Lean In, that piece was missing from those discussions as well. We were talking about, you know, what are the barriers for women to be on boards, be heads of corporation, make it in politics, and nobody was talking about the fact that, you know, one in four women experience some kind of violence directed against them because they're women, and that's obviously going to be a barrier to taking political office or finishing your education or getting a good job.
What kind of violence did you examine in the report?
I looked at two forms of violence experienced by women, and I just looked at adult women as well. I looked at intimate partner violence and sexual assault, and I chose those because they are two forms of violence where we, our National Statistical Agency tracks levels, and our police forces track incidents. And so we have some information about what the levels of incidents are for those crimes, and so I wanted to have a look at that.
One of the things that comes up in your report that is actually very difficult to, that there's not as much information as there needs to be about the level of violence. Do we even know if the rates of violence against women are going up or down?
We don't. We do not know. We can make educated guesses, and researchers have, but the first problem with measuring levels of violence against women is that these crimes don't get reported very often. In the case of sexual assault, about 1 in 10 crimes will be reported to the police. And in fact, because there's so much stigma which is attached in this crime in particular to the victim as opposed to the perpetrator, that often victims of sexual assault will not only tell police, but they might not even tell, you know, a friend or a family member. So that in itself makes it very hard to sort of work out, you know, how often these crimes are occurring. But the other problem is in Canada, we haven't measured the rates of these kinds of violence very regularly. You know, police statistics aren't very useful in as far as, you know, they just are giving us that tip of the iceberg. They're giving us the 10%. So you really have to do telephone surveys and in-person interviews to get a better sense of what the levels are. And we have done that in Canada in the past, particularly in 1993, but that was 20 years ago. And so that leaves us with another big gap in, you know, the information about is this going up? Is it going down? Is, you know, domestic violence going down but sexual assault going up? That seems to be what's happening, but we don't know for sure.
So we haven't done any detailed analysis in 20 years?
Not sufficiently detailed, no. The only other survey that's conducted by Statistics Canada is they do a survey every 5 years, which asks questions about all kinds of experiences of crime. So everything from, you know, having your purse snatched to homicide. And within that survey, they ask a couple of questions about sexual assault and a couple of questions about intimate partner violence. And those give us our best numbers. But even with those surveys, they don't have, they don't, they're not able to talk to enough people for us to know what rates of sexual assault or intimate partner violence look like when you get to, say, the Northwest Territories or Prince Edward Island, where you have a very small population and you would really have to go and survey a much larger group of people to really know what was happening in that part of the country.
What does the data that we do have tell us about the extent of the problem?
The data is consistent and clear about the extent of the problem. There was just recently released an estimate of rates of violence against women throughout their lifetime conducted by the World Health Organization. And they looked at, just for the group of high-income countries, which included Canada, they looked at over 100 surveys of levels of violence and then kind of aggregated them and came up with the estimate that 24% of all women in Canada will experience one of these two forms of violence at some point in her life. So that's big. That's a lot of women. And that's, every other study has come to fairly similar conclusions. So, you know, the finer measures, we don't know. We don't know what it looks like in PEI versus the Yukon versus Ontario. We don't know how it moves from year to year, but we do know very clearly that this is affecting millions of women in Canada.
Are there particular groups of women who experience even higher levels of violence?
There are. Indigenous women in particular experience rates of sexual assault and intimate partner violence at about 3 times the rate of non-Indigenous women. And we've also seen organizations like the Native Women's Association of Canada demonstrate that not only are Indigenous women more likely to be victims of these crimes, but their cases are less likely to be heard by the police, and they are less likely to go to prosecution.
Now, you talk about the personal impact of violence on women's lives, and particularly in the impact and them getting ahead in a number of different areas of life, but you also look at the impact on the economy. Now, why did you decide to do that?
Well, that was really the impetus for this report, because there has been, you know, some very excellent research on the personal costs of violence against women and the social impacts. But you know, I really wanted to see how much this was costing, and the reason for that was not because you can put a number to someone suffering. I mean, that's not what this is about, but because, you know, the federal and provincial governments have a role to play in ending violence against women. This is clearly an issue of safety for Canadians, and we expect our governments to play a role in ensuring our safety. And so as soon as you're addressing yourself to the government and you're asking them to spend public funds on something, you have to talk about cost. And so it seemed to me that was something that I could add to this debate, was to say, you know, what does this actually cost, and how does that compare to, say, how much we're spending to try and end violence against women? And as it turns out, it costs us billions of dollars a year. So I think there's a very clear economic case to spend more public funds to decrease levels of violence against women in order to actually, I mean, obviously for the good of Canadians in the first place, but in the second place, it's cost effective.
So you say billions of dollars. What are you calculating when you add up the numbers?
There are first of all, direct costs of both of these kinds of violence. So if someone experiences one of these crimes, they may go to the emergency room, they might visit the doctor, so they're going to be health care costs. They might seek help from a victim services. They might go to a counseling agency. So there are those kinds of costs. Then you have the very small percentage of people who do go to the police. So then there are policing costs. And then we get into criminal court costs, justice costs, and then correction service costs. There are also indirect costs. So on average, when women, and I mean, we can just all imagine this, I think, as people. people, you know, if you experience this kind of traumatic event, you might not go to work the next day. You're not going to be as productive. And so we see losses to the individual's income. We see productivity losses for their employers, and losses to their families and their communities in terms of the kinds of roles that they would have played if they hadn't experienced this kind of trauma.
Now, you come up with a number of $1.9 billion in direct costs, not considering pain and suffering, of course.
That's
when you consider that, it shoots way up. How much is the federal government spending to prevent violence against women?
The federal government right now is spending about $80 million a year.
That's a pretty big gap.
It does seem like a big gap. It does to me. And I think what worries me in particular is it's not just that more money needs to be spent, although I think more money needs to be spent. It's that we also really don't know how effective those interventions are, because we're also not measuring their impact very well. And so it seems to me that that we need to spend better on this issue as well, and that's going to take some national leadership.
Do we have a national plan?
We do not have a national action plan on violence against women, and I think we need one, not only because the Secretary General of the United Nations has asked all of the member states to have one by the year 2015, but because we've seen, I think, something like 40 countries now adopt something like a national action plan on violence against women, including countries with federal systems like ours, like Australia. And that kind of national leadership is incredibly useful and, I would say, really essential to making sure that across the country we know what programs are working, we know where there are needs that have to be addressed. For example, in rural areas in the north, you know, there's a real need for more services. We know that there are public education programs, like one that was recently in the news, Don't Be That Guy. Police services in Vancouver and Edmonton have both said that they think, as a result of this public education campaign, sexual assaults have dropped up to 10% in their cities. And so if we can look at that at the national level and say, well, that worked for Vancouver, why aren't we doing this everywhere? You know, that's why we need that kind of national leadership.
Well, it's been really interesting talking to you today, and I'm going to refer people to the report, which they can read online. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
I've been speaking with Kate McInturf. She's Research Associate with the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives in Ottawa, and she's author of The Gap in the Gender Gap. If you would like to read that online, you simply go to policyalternatives.ca.